Welcome to Crazy Good Turns. Our goal is to celebrate people who do good deeds, big or small. We discover our stories through research and with help from you, our listeners. Visit our website at crazygoodturns.org/submissions to tell us about a person or organization who's done something great for someone else, and they could be featured on an upcoming episode. As always, thanks for listening.
I don't like the term wounded. Because I'm not wounded. I used to be. I used to be injured. Now I'm fixed. I'm healed. I have scars. They're awesome. Awesome scars. But you know, I'm pushing forward in life. And I just wish that everybody could, you know, buckle down, see the self-worth they have, and understand, hey, life goes on. And it's what you make it. And anybody can do anything. And that truly does, you know, I'm going to say true again, but that really does hold true in today's society, because I drive where I want to drive. I take my wife on dates. My daughter and I go to father-daughter dances, and I just had a son 10 weeks ago. So, you know, and I'm a guy with no arms, no legs.
That's Travis Mills, one of only five Americans who returned from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan as a quadruple amputee. You'd think his story is about loss, but it's not. It's about seeing the good and the humor in the most traumatic experience one can imagine and using that experience to lift fellow veterans up and all of us along the way. This is Crazy Good Turns. We tell inspiring stories about people who do amazing things for others, and I'm your host, Brad Shaw.
I was fortunate that my mom and dad, in April of 1987, decided to have their favorite child, which was me. I'm from Vassar, Michigan, a small town, but love where I'm from. I was the middle child, so I had an older sister, younger brother, grew up playing sports, football, basketball, baseball, powerlifting, track, you name it, I did it. I was a captain of the baseball and football and basketball team, you know, both junior and senior year. I think the baseball, I'm pretty sure I was a captain the sophomore year too, but anyway, just kind of did that, did the school thing. After high school, went to college, played a little bit of football, and then moved home to try to recalibrate my life and figure out, you know, is college really something that I want to do right now? Am I dedicated enough to get, you know, to get in debt and to be dedicated to school, to be honest?
It turned out college wasn't for Travis.
I just thought, you know, there's got to be something else I can be doing, and I need to have some kind of fulfillment where I feel like I'm giving back. I feel like I'm part of a team. And, you know, we're making strides I'm making strides to better myself.
So Travis, whose dad was in the Army, decided to go into the military. He went to every service branch recruitment office, but landed on the Army because they offered a signing bonus that would help him pay off his student loans. After basic training at Fort Benning, Georgia, he joined the famed 82nd Airborne Division, what many consider the most highly trained light infantry division in the world, specializing in parachute assault operations. In 2007, at age 19, Travis was deployed to Afghanistan.
Well, I mean, the first deployment, I worked for a lieutenant colonel. We went out on missions every day, came back every night. We got to have hot food mostly every night on the big FOB, or the forward operating base. And, you know, I was 19, in charge of my own truck, riding with the lieutenant colonel. So he's the most protected guy. And you don't want to, I mean, that's the detail you want to get on, but it's not one that you're right home bragging to your friends that you were on. And then my second deployment was a lot different. Second deployment was some firefights, and there was some combat. And, you know, it would kick up. And then for about a month and a half, we'd fight real hard. And then we'd just demoralize them so much that they'd quit fighting us. And then they'd call my platoon up, and they'd move us somewhere else to go fight somewhere else. And they'd backfill us with other people. And that was a year-long deployment. I took 4 showers that year.
While on that first deployment, Travis became good friends with a medic in his platoon, a guy named Josh Buck. Back home in the States, Josh's little sister, Kelsey, saw a picture of Travis on MySpace, back when MySpace was a thing, and the two struck up an online, long-distance relationship. When Travis came home at Christmas time for some R&R, the two took a trip to Mexico, fell in love, eventually married, and had a baby girl named Chloe. Travis's third deployment came in February 2012. He had been promoted to the rank of E6 Staff Sergeant, which put him in charge of 2 teams of soldiers. Because it was his third deployment, he could have opted out of going back to Afghanistan.
I was supposed to go to Fort Hood, Texas, but I canceled my orders because those guys believe in me and they wanted to be there with me, and they look up to me, and I taught them everything that I knew to make sure that they'd be successful overseas, and I couldn't see leaving them to go to Fort Hood while they went over to Afghanistan.
In his best-selling book, As Tough As They Come, Travis recalls telling his brother-in-law, Josh, he had a bad feeling about his upcoming deployment, that he wasn't sure he'd be back. Those feelings proved prescient.
A lot different battlefield, a lot more firefights, a lot more restraints on what we could and couldn't do as well. which hindered our, you know, our battlefield movements because we weren't allowed to go out at nighttime. So we would fight during the day, have to be back on our strong point at nighttime, and then we could watch the Taliban on cameras put bombs in the ground but do nothing about it. There was nothing we could do about it until the next morning we had to try and go find them.
Here's Travis describing the day that changed his life, April 10, 2012.
About 4:30 in the afternoon, I was walking along on a patrol. We came to a short halt. We swept the ground with a minesweeper. One of my soldiers did. Nothing alarmed him that there was anything in the ground. I set my backpack on the ground, and under my bag was a bomb. When the bomb went off, it threw me to the left side of my face on the ground, right on my head. When I rolled over, my left cheek started to swell up, so my eye swelled shut. My right leg and right arm were disintegrated. They never actually found those pieces. My left leg was dangling by my thigh with muscle and tendon holding on, and my left arm was blown out at the wrist pretty bad, but I could still move my thumb, index, and middle finger at the time. So I rolled over. I saw what happened. My medic, my platoon sergeant, started putting tourniquets on me. I yelled at my medic, just don't worry about it. Go fix my guys. I didn't think I was going to make it. Not that I wanted to die. I just didn't think there was anything they could do for me. So in my head, I was just saying, don't cry. Don't complain. Don't go out like Saving Private Ryan when the medic dies.
Travis was airlifted by a helicopter to Kandahar, where medics worked feverishly to save his life. Still conscious, Travis only thought about the men he led.
And I'm sitting there trying to fight him off. I'm like, get away from me. I'm fine. Leave me alone. I got to get back to my guys. They were just like, Sergeant Mills, I don't know how you're still awake, but you need to go to sleep right now. So they went ahead and they knocked me out. And when they knocked me out, the last thing I got out of my mouth was, my little girl, am I ever going to see her again? You know, then I was out. And they started to undress me. And when they took my pants off, my left leg came with it. So I became a triple amputee.
Travis endured 14 hours of surgery and over 30 blood transfusions. He was transferred to Bagram Air Base with his brother-in-law, Josh, who had also been redeployed to Afghanistan. His left hand was beyond repair, and surgeons removed it, making him a quadruple amputee.
Then on April 14th in Landstuhl, Germany, I woke up for the first time. And my brother-in-law was there. And then I looked at him and said, you know, my soldiers, how are my soldiers? And he told me what had happened. And I said, okay. And I said, am I paralyzed? And he said, no. And I said, no, Josh, I can't put my fingers and toes. Am I paralyzed? And he said, you're not paralyzed, but you don't have them anymore. So right then and there, I'm pretty down out, questioning, does God hate me? Am I a bad person? Why would this happen? What did I do wrong in life? Am I going to be a burden? How can I be a father? How can I be a husband? So I don't talk to anybody for about 3 hours. I wouldn't say one word. No, I wouldn't respond to anybody. It was a hard thing to hear. But then finally, Josh is like, hey, you got to call your wife and you got to call your parents. So I called Kelsey and I said, hey, what's up? I'm fine. Love you. Bye. That's all. I didn't say nothing else. I didn't want to have a conversation. My parents, same thing. Hey, what's up? I'm fine. Love you. Bye. And as Josh was getting ready to hang the phone up for him, my mom said, hey, Travis, by the way, happy birthday. Because my 25th birthday is the day they woke me up and I found out what had all happened to me.
3 days later, Travis arrived at Walter Reed. Here, Kelsey saw Travis for the first time since his accident, but he says it wasn't what he'd call a Kodak moment. She immediately had to sign papers permitting emergency surgery to remove another 2 inches of Travis's right leg, or he'd bleed out.
The next day, she came in and saw me, and I just kind of told her, I said, look, Kelsey, you're 23, I'm 25, we have a six-month-old little girl. This is not the life you would want. This is not the life I would want for you. This is not what Chloe deserves or you deserve, so why don't you just take the house, the cars, the money in the account, anything we have is yours. Financially, I'll fund whatever I can, whatever you need forever. And you just take Chloe and go. And my wife was like, that's not at all how this works. I kind of got scolding from saying that. But my wife was there for me. And, you know, I can't commend her enough on how awesome she is. And my daughter, 6 months.
And he got to hold his baby girl, Chloe, again. So what was it like the first time you held Chloe at Walter Reed?
Well, I mean, she came in, laid on my chest. I thought she was going to be afraid of me, of course. I got tubes out of each arm and each leg that are wound vac machines. I have a PICC line out of my neck and just all this stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, she's going to be so afraid. And she gets on my chest and she starts giggling and laughing and playing. And then I realize, like, oh, my gosh, I literally look like every single toy she's ever been given. Short arms, short legs, fuzzy chest. I'm a teddy bear, so she likes it.
Travis says the initial phantom pain from his lost limbs was excruciating. He compared it to being filleted alive, doused with gas, and lit on fire. Doctors ramped up the morphine and other drugs, but nothing eased the pain. Worried he might overdose or become immune to the painkillers, the doctors induced a coma, a highly risky procedure that could kill him.
I had a ketamine coma, it's called. So I took 600 milligrams of ketamine an hour for 5 days straight and knocked me out. What it was supposed to do was reset my nerve endings where it would think my nerve endings end where my arms and my legs are cut off at. I woke up and I hallucinated like crazy. Anything that was on TV was just like another hallucination for me. So I was watching Seinfeld, and all of a sudden Kramer's sitting next to my bed for 3 hours talking with me. Genghis Khan's on TV on History Channel, and I'm fighting Genghis Khan and some barbarians with bow and arrows and swords. Like Ovechkin was scoring goals for the Capitals. So I'm sitting there, and my father-in-law, Craig, walks back in the door the next morning. I said, Craig, I scored 9 goals last night, a triple hat trick with Ovechkin. Can you believe it? And then it was crazy because he couldn't believe it. He's like, really? No way.
The coma worked. Travis was able to quit all painkillers and takes none to this day. Lying in bed at Walter Reed before he could start his road to recovery, Travis says he initially felt bitter about the hand he'd been dealt.
But, you know, after about 2 weeks of kind of like being upset and angry and down about it, it's just like you realize this is your situation. You got to tell yourself, this is the situation you're in. You can't change the situation. You might as well just suck it up and get moving. My wife's going to stay. My daughter's still my daughter. My parents and my in-laws are there. My family still loves me. And no matter what I do, I can't close my eyes and clench them shut until this all, you know, ends and the nightmare gets over and I wake up. So I decided that, you know what, it's time to just suck it up and go.
Travis attacked his rehabilitation with the same courage and determination that drove his life prior to his injury.
So I started my therapy and my training as fast as I could. I got an arm within 5 weeks so I could dress myself, feed myself, clothe myself, go to the bathroom by myself. And then after that, I started walking at 7 weeks and 4 days and just continued my workout until my workout became the only thing that I wanted to do. I actually hated the weekends. Everybody looks forward to the weekends and they love the weekends. And me, for the first probably 5 to 7 months, I couldn't stand the weekends because all I wanted to do was get better. So I would work out 8 hours a day, 4 of occupational therapy, 4 of physical therapy, 5 days a week, 40 hours a week, as many times as I could go in there.
Early in his stay at Walter Reed, Travis was visited by Todd Nicely, the second quadruple amputee from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Seeing Todd walk into the room on his 2 prosthetic legs, stroll to the fridge and open a can of soda with his prosthetic hand gave Travis hope that he could one day lead a normal life.
He was just like, hey man, life goes on. You're going to be okay. And after I met with him and I got to see like all the stuff at Walter Reed, the prosthetics, what I would have the ability to do with walking, feeding myself, driving. It was just not about, can I do this? More about how long is it going to take me to do this? And what's the fastest route that I can do to get better? Not a lot of dads can say they learn how to walk with their children, but me and Chloe learned how to walk together.
And that brief encounter with Todd also inspired Travis to mentor his fellow soldiers at Walter Reed, with a little help from his doctors and nurses.
And I wanted to pay that back forward. And on top of that, there are a lot of doctors and nurses that took notice of my upbeat attitude, how I acted at the gym, how I was a positive influence on some of these guys that are younger that haven't really settled into what's happened and the gravity of the situation or understand how they can get past the problems that they're having with, you know, the amputations or their new normal or their life. And they just started saying, hey, Travis, we'd love for you to talk to somebody upstairs. We can't tell you their name or room number because of, you know, laws and rules and stuff, but I can tell you that the, you know, he's not in 40 and he's not in 42, but if you can find him, you know, that'd be great. You know, I'd go up to the room and talk. And then finally it was like, hey, Travis, you know, like PFC Johnson's here. He's got 2 legs missing, 1 above knee, 1 below knee. His mom, his wife, and his 2 kids are here. Can you go talk to him? And I met everybody there as one of the first people that they got to talk to when they got to the hospital. And I think why that was so impactful was because at Walter Reed, the worst amputation you're going to see is me. As unfortunate as that is, if I'm the positive message coming to your room and you're missing 1 leg and you know, feeling pretty down about yourself, I don't downplay you missing only 1 leg. I'll make a joke and be like, oh my gosh, how's the paper cut doing? Are you okay? But it really is uplifting, I think, that a guy with no arms and legs either rolls in or walks in and is like, hey man, what's up? How's life treating you? You're in a great spot. You're going to get better. And I can't wait to see you down there. We'll work out together one day. And a lot of the guys are really thankful for that, I found out. So very proud to say that I was able to do that and just kind of give back the same way Todd did for me.
Travis walked again for the first time on June 2nd, 2012, less than 2 months after his accident. At Walter Reed, he had to relearn how to do literally every physical task in life, big and small. How to hold a cup of coffee, zip his pants, pick a credit card up off the table, drive a car, all with prosthetic limbs. In November 2013, Travis officially retired from the military and left Walter Reed. He, Kelsey, and Chloe moved in with Kelsey's parents in Texas to escape the winters back home in Michigan.
And I remember going home, going into the bedroom that they had set up for me, and there's a picture on the wall that, I mean, it's a pretty well-known picture. I use it every time I speak at the different functions I go to, but it had me with an orange baseball cap on that says Vassar on it from the hometown I'm on with all my gear on. And I broke down. I'm like, well, now what? Like, what's my identity now? Who am I going to be now without the military, without my arms and legs, without the ability to finish my 20 years in the Army? And it took me, a couple minutes, I guess. But then I was like, no, it's going to be fine. We're going to get through this.
In April of 2014, Travis got a call from the actor Gary Sinise, well known for his work with injured veterans. Sinise had partnered with the Steven Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation, which, among other things, builds smart homes for catastrophically injured vets. We actually featured them in season one, so check them out if you haven't yet. Sinise told Travis and Kelsey that he and Tunnel to Towers were going to build them a smart home anywhere in the country they chose, for free. They picked Maine, where Kelsey's parents were originally from, and where she still had a network of family and friends to lend support. In Maine, Travis and Kelsey sought out ways to give back and help veterans, starting a nonprofit to provide care packages to injured vets. On that journey, he saw a void in the recovery process many veterans face at Walter Reed. Because of the catastrophic nature of his injuries, Travis was surrounded by his family at literally every step of the process, while most veterans have more restrictions on family time.
I think everything at Walter Reed was just top-notch, but my recovery was really driven by my family. So if I can have a place where I can have the service member, the spouse, and the children all come out, all be a part of it, all be able to cope with what they had happen, understand that no one that comes here is going to judge them, going to look at them differently because they're all in the same situation, and they can really build that network, then I've done what I think is the best thing for me and the way I want to give back. And my wife and I, that's what we saw, and that's what we dedicated everything that we do to.
They hosted injured veterans and their families at their home in Maine, helping them heal through the restorative power of family and shared experience. Seeing traction in their efforts, they launched the Travis Mills Foundation and looked for a permanent retreat to host veterans and their families in bigger groups for longer stays.
We went out shopping. We found Elizabeth Arden's estate that she had built in 1929, and it was in pretty bad disarray. But we went out there, and we bought it. We fixed it up, two-year project.
Travis and Kelsey raised nearly $3 million to buy and renovate the estate called the Maine Chance Lodge and Retreat. It sits on 1,200 acres of pristine vistas on the Belgrade Lakes region of Maine, and this past summer opened its doors for the first time to veterans and their families.
We hosted 7 weeks of families with 8 families coming per week. So 56 different veteran families came up, 25 to 35 on average per week. It went so well and we had so much support that we were able to open up 4 more weeks of families coming. And we just started that this week. Our last week is going to be with victims from Houston and Florida from the hurricanes. So we're bringing them up and we have some wonderful things going on for them and we're just excited to be able to give back.
Veterans and their families stay at the retreat free of charge and enjoy a host of activities from kayaking and fishing to archery and just hanging out and talking with families facing similar challenges and obstacles in life.
They just get to relax. They're in a safe environment that's barrier-free. So no matter what their disability is or what their extent of paralyzation or amputation or range of movement, they can get anywhere on our property. They have their family there with them so that they don't have to live life on the sidelines. We show them how to do things adaptively, which is great. They can take everything that they learn there with them, take it home. And there's other spouses there that meet other spouses meet each other. So they have a network to go off from if they have a rough day or if they have a question or if they just want to call and chat and need someone that understands them. And then the children get to run around with other children that are, with parents, either the mother or father that have the amputation or that have been through this. So it really is just a bonding experience. It's that network. It's that, hey, have confidence in yourself. Know you can still do things productively in your family and society. And I try to always ensure to tell, to live the motto that I have and to ensure people understand it, to never give up and never quit because there's so much left that we can still do even though we're in the situation.
The newly hired maintenance manager at the retreat is Chris Roseberry, himself an Army combat veteran and amputee. He lost part of his leg in a motorcycle accident in 2005 while back home between deployments. It didn't keep him down.
About a year and a half or so after my accident, I was back to running as much as I could. I went back on the airborne status, so I got to keep jumping out of planes. Took the Army physical fitness test and passed it.
He returned to combat in Afghanistan with his prosthetic leg, but in 2014 he sustained an injury to his leg while jumping off a building to avoid getting hit by a rocket-propelled grenade. He ended up at Walter Reed, where they removed another 4 inches of his leg. Chris decided to give his beaten-up leg some rest.
I was blessed to get 13 years out of it, so I think it's time for me to retire and find something a little less high impact.
Before joining the Travis Mills Foundation full-time, Chris was among the first veterans to stay at the retreat.
For me, it was just great, you know, just to sit back and relax and, you know, listen to everyone's stories. I mean, like I said, we've all come from different places, and everyone's injuries happen different ways. The healing process, you know, never truly ends, so it's always good to listen to other people and, you know, see what they've done, what's helped them overcome a lot of their issues.
Travis says they'll increase the number of weeks the retreat operates next summer to bring in more families. And he dreams of opening other retreats across the country, perhaps one for Vietnam vets. He told us he may run for office one day and would love a gig as a military analyst on a cable news network. And no surprise, he does a ton of motivational speaking, always lacing his talks with his unique brand of self-deprecating humor.
Well, I find that it's easier to tell a joke and disarm the situation. Ha! But yeah, I mean, it's to make everybody feel comfortable, to understand, you know, I'm just a regular guy. I walk out on stage, and the first thing I say every time I speak, I just made this joke up a couple of weeks ago, but I say it now, and I say, ladies and gentlemen, I'm so nervous right now. Oh my gosh, I really hope I don't bomb this, because, you know, last time, what happened? And, you know, it just sets a tone, and I don't want people to feel any different way about me, and I want them to know they have a real conversation. I'm the same guy I was before the explosion, just, you know, less body parts, I guess, but you don't have to see me in a different light. You don't have to, you know, talk louder or be worried about saying stuff.
I'm Brad Shaw, and thanks for listening to this episode of Crazy Good Turns. Go to crazygoodturns.org to learn more about or donate to the Travis Mills Foundation. You can also submit your ideas for extraordinary people or organizations we should feature, and stay connected with us between episodes by following us on Facebook and Twitter. This season, we're excited to announce that we're giving a $50,000 grant to the nonprofit that does the most to creatively spread their Crazy Good Turn story, a virtuous and self-reinforcing circle of gratitude. We'll announce the grant recipient at the end of this season. Crazy Good Turns is audio engineered by Stephen Key. Music supervision and mixing by Score Score in Los Angeles. Research and editing by Martine Chaussard. And a special thanks to Megan Basinger.
I will walk my daughter down the aisle at her wedding. I will dance with my daughter at father-daughter dances, and I will constantly be a guiding mentor in her life. So there's no reason at all why I would give up. And also, chicks dig guys with handicap tags. So, I mean, get out there on eHarmony and find some love.